Welcome back to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer, and this show is about impact. So you have to have the CEO of Impact Theory, Tom Bilyeu, a good friend and a great leader. He's someone who inspires me because of his authenticity, but also his vulnerability and his journey to over $1 billion. And he's a successful entrepreneur, but now he's following his true passion. Tom Bilyeu, welcome back to Office Hours.
Thanks for having me. As always, it's wonderful.
So your journey's well known, and understanding discipline and self-belief and image. But what's interesting about your journey to me, and we've had some really great deep conversations, is that you actually have outkicked your coverage, not just in your marriage to Lisa, but in business. You know, very few people have experience building over a $1 billion company, a well-known, successful nutrition brand like Quest. But you weren't satisfied through the journey, but you actually, unlike me, you knew the whole time this wasn't what you wanted to do, but yet you were able to be so successful without a true passion for what you were doing to get to where you are today. What were some of the techniques, mindset-wise, that you utilized in that journey to be so successful when you really had a passion for something else?
Well, the key is you do have to anchor around a passion for that thing that you're doing. So I think the most important question anybody can ask is, what would I do and love every day, even if I were failing? So I had to anchor around nutrition on something that was real. And for me, that was the fact that I grew up in a morbidly obese family, and my mom and my sister were really struggling. And I wanted to make food that they could choose based on taste, and it happened to be good for them. Now, had that not been a success, and you know, I spent the next 30 years grinding it out, I could really attach myself to that emotionally, and I really did care about it, and it was very motivating for me. Because you know, on those nights, it's a Friday night, it's 2 a.m., you're under a machine, your knuckles are bleeding, you're fixing the heat coupling on a wrapping machine. It's like, you better know why you're doing what you're doing. And so even though I had in my mind that, hey, if I can make this successful, I know what I'm going to be doing next, I really did have to find a very deep connection to the people that I was serving.
I love it. Erwin.
Well, I was interested in your journey in the health industry and then achieving so much success and now working so much to help people really optimize their own capacity. What do you do? What do you transfer from your physical health to like your emotional, internal health and your well-being? How do you make sure that your inner world is doing well day to day?
Yeah, there's not a big difference between your body and your mental health. So one is, I just focus a lot on making sure that I'm getting a lot of sleep as much as I can. I may not sleep as much as the next person, but I go to bed at 9 p.m. I do not set an alarm. I wake up when I wake up, and I work out, I eat right. And love, as cheesy as it sounds, is really such an important part of this. And so the fact that I've been married to the same woman for 22 years is the greatest joy, the greatest success of my life. And nothing has given me more than that. And so all of that stuff is incredibly intentional. I do things like meditate. I do things like forcing myself to pattern interrupt negative patterns. So as I have said many times, I can't stop myself from thinking the first negative thought, but I can stop myself from death looping on it. So I have a bunch of tricks and tips that I, you know, will use to even just using cognitive behavioral therapy to get in there and break up a negative thought pattern. All those things are very, very important. And so you are what you repeat. And I try to repeat healthy habits and interrupt negative habits.
That's so good.
Yeah, that is good.
It's funny, Bobby, because I always say it's so easy to overthink the negative. And I've almost started practicing something that is almost humanly impossible, which is to overthink the positive. Imagine going to bed going, oh my God, I can't even go to sleep because tomorrow's going to be so awesome. And then you wake up going, I just can't get out of my head how awesome this whole life is. I am just the luckiest. It's almost, you have to force yourself and you still can't overthink the positive, but it's so easy to get down to that negativity loop.
It is. It's funny. I do want to circle back to something that you said, how he's kicking out of his coverage with his wife.
You know, I
don't think Tom wants to talk about it. That's amazing. No, but you set out on a mission, you set out on this mission to create Quest, right? Like, and you did that and you did a fantastic job. Besides besides the obvious with that, what was your deeper passion in growing that brand? What was that overall guiding impact that you wanted to create besides the obvious?
I don't know that there was anything besides the obvious. It was just grounded in people that I knew and loved. And I think making it immediate like that, making it not about some vague sense that there are people out there, but really saying, all right, these two people that I know and love, I can show up on a weekend for them. I can work, you know, 90 hours for them. I'm not going to do it for an idea or a concept. It really has to be grounded. And so one thing that I've been very good about in my different businesses is finding a way to say, okay, this person, and of course the people like them, but this person is the person that I'm really trying to serve. And if you can get yourself into a service mindset that I'm pursuing an honorable goal and I'm here to serve these people and I'm a warrior for these people, then it becomes a lot easier to persevere. But if you don't have somebody in your mind very specifically that you're fighting on behalf of, I think you're going to have a really hard time, at least if you're wired like me.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about interviewing Tom, and this is the second time we've done this, is, you know, all these little things that you share, like there's so much wisdom behind it. You know, a lot of people, when you interview them, they have little acronyms or they have things that they share, but you don't feel the same resonance. You can really tell that you've been putting in the work. I want to ask you a question around, were you always like this? Were you just this personality? Right? Or did you have to become this? And what was that journey like for you?
Yeah, I definitely had to become this. So when I was young, my own mother quietly assumed I was going to fail. Now, she was always my biggest cheerleader. But she finally admitted one day, she was like, man, I really just thought you were going to fail. And I was like, whoa, it was so disorienting because she had always been like, you're going to do it. It's going to be amazing. And so to realize that she was quietly like, oh, this kid is doomed. My best friend in high school said, oh, I just assumed you were going to marshmallow your way through life. When I asked my father-in-law for his blessing to marry his daughter, he said no. So it was really the people closest to me, with the exception of my wife, the people closest to me assumed I was going to fail. And the thing that they didn't understand that I hoped, but honestly, if you'd asked me when I was in my early 20s, if it was real, I would have said, I hope it's real, but I don't know that it is. And that's that I had enough discipline to acquire skills. And so my life really changed when I started reading about the brain. And so in the late 90s, the idea was hotly contested. Now it's, I think, pretty settled science, but the idea of brain plasticity was, half of the scientists were saying this is real and the other half were saying this is not real and you really can't teach an old dog new tricks. And one day I just decided I'm going to act as if I can get better and let's see what happens. And it's now what I call the only belief that matters. The only belief that matters is that if I put time and energy into getting better, I will actually get better. And so I looked at my life and I was like, I'm not good enough to get where I want to go in life yet. And adding on that word yet was utterly life-changing. And so I just set about going, okay, I'm going to try to acquire skills in the most rapid and efficient manner possible to overcome the obstacles to stand between where I'm at and where I want to go. And look, there are some things that are not well-suited to my personality. And so those things, if you can outsource them to somebody else, great, do it. But I like to remind people, goals make demands. And so if you want to achieve, you know, let's just take Kobe Bryant. If you want to be the greatest basketball player of all time, you're going to have to rack up championships. And to rack up championships, you're going to have to get your body in a certain shape. You're going to have to practice the game, watch tape, do all that stuff. And if you don't do them, then you simply won't achieve your goal. And so you can rail against it and say that it's unfair, but the reality is it's your goal making that demand. It's not your parents. It's not the world. It's your goal. And I embraced that in my, call it mid to late 20s. And that just directionally has since dominated my life.
It's interesting working with young people when they talk about progress. And I love the self-acknowledgement of I'm not there yet. And I need to develop skills. I need to develop knowledge of who and what. But I have to maintain my desire because it won't be the mistakes. It'll be the lack of commitment that creates the failure in that progress. But there's only one speed to that progress. And it's hard to tell kids this. And it was hard to tell myself. It's called not fast enough. And, you know, to understand the speed of progress is not fast enough, especially when you're young, is a really difficult thing to reconcile with. I want to finish up by talking about not the past, but the future. When we talk about not fast enough, I've been super excited about Kaizen and what you're doing content wise and creating a really fast paced way to interact in third party gaming. And I'm sure it hasn't happened fast enough. And especially considering your past successes, we always think and forget how long it took us to get to the first success or the greatest success. And we think, oh, we'll just step sideways into this. And now it's going to happen fast enough. How are you dealing with the speed of progress in your new venture, Kaizen?
Honestly, I rage against it. And so rate of change is something that I'm really obsessed about. I used to wear a shirt that said F patience.
Yeah.
And I get it. I understand why people lean into that. And hey, if that speaks to your soul, great. What speaks to my soul is, okay, it's a Peter Thiel question. What is stopping you from making your 10-year plan happen in 6 months? And what that does is it really forces you to radically reassess what you're doing and the rate of change. And is there something that you could do that would dramatically, order of magnitude, increase your rate of change? And I find that myself and basically anybody else, you can become blinded by the fact that you're making progress and not realize that the rate of change is way too slow to be acceptable. And if you run the experiment out at this rate of change, when will I reach my goal? And oftentimes it's like 4,000 years, right? I mean, it's just like, it's absolutely ridiculous. It is way too slow. And you're really never going to get there. And let's remember, the vast majority of people fail. So when people say failure is not an option, it's like, it's the most obvious option. It is the most likely outcome. Mm-hmm.
I love
and
that.
If you don't rail against that with everything you have, you're never going to be able to create momentum. So the way that I would encourage people to think about it is you are trying to hit escape velocity, which means you are trying to generate so much energy, so much momentum, so much power and speed that you can break out of the gravity well that is the human life. So all of us are fighting against what I call the chaos machine. So you guys are sports guys. So think about it this way. You are in the NFL and you're standing at the line of scrimmage and you are trying to get the ball all the way into the end zone. The problem is, if you're not in home turf, the audience is trying to scream so loudly that you can't hear the plays. The other players are doing everything they can to stop you, not only at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage. You've got all the coaches and players. They've watched all this footage on you. The world is quite literally working against you. And so for you to figure out that one path through to face all the pain and difficulties and challenges to ultimately make it to that end zone, that's what you're trying to do in life. That is really a perfect analogy. Now, is the world consciously working against you? Well, you certainly your competitors are, but even if it's not consciously working against you, it is just so difficult. And so the amount of time, energy, enthusiasm, persistence, and constantly asking, how do I do this a lot faster, that you're going to have to do to succeed, knows basically no limits.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Erwin, you're going to like this, but when I call a friend a genius, I'm saying that he is an expression of God. Mm. And when you listen to Tom Bilyeu, Impact Theory, Kaizen, and the great wisdom and faith that he has to create the discipline that's necessary for the progress to create exponentiality of outcomes, Tom Bilyeu, you are an expression of God. You are a genius, and we appreciate you always showing up for our community. And anything we can do for you, just let us know. Thank you again for joining us. This is David Meltzer with my three sports heroes next to me here on Office Hours.